Salutations, my friends. Thank you for tuning in. That's right, a whole new show brought to you by On the Wake Up Radio, titled Fellowship and Freedom. Share truth. This is Noise Era, Freedom Faction. Out.
Salutations, my friends, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of Fellowship and Freedom. I'm your host, Noise Era, Freedom Faction, whichever one you prefer, and I am actually joined by my awesome guest, Adam of Shamanic Philosophy.
Adam, what's up, guys? Okay. EJ, thanks for having me, man.
Oh, dude, the pleasure is mine. I have so many things I wanted to talk to you about. And as I said before, the last time that we talked, it's always an honor to have people like yourself on to talk about these types of things. So really, thank you for coming on, my man.
Thanks so much for having me, man. We had a great visit last time. I'm looking forward to tonight. We'll see where this goes. I can only imagine what you've got cooked up.
Me? Having something cooked up.
Oh, yeah.
Geez. No way.
You.
No way. Well, I guess, you know, we were kind of talking about this at the start of the show or before the show, really, you know, and I guess this kind of sets the tone for one of the reasons as to why I wanted to have you on, Adam. It doesn't necessarily feel like the holiday spirit. It doesn't feel festive. And I think one of the reasons why is because people are absorbed in politics and all the things that are going on with that. I know we definitely keep tabs on it with the page and the show, but there's more to life. And the last time that we talked, my friend, you definitely exemplified, like, I guess just the spiritual essence that I'm trying to get people to understand, and the spiritual peace and the oneness that comes with that. I guess what I'm trying to say is I wanted to invite you on the show to tell people that while all this political stuff is going on, realize it's almost towards the end of the year and most people aren't really looking in themselves to have that change. And my friend, I know you're definitely one of the people that can talk about that type of inner transformation.
Oh, I appreciate it, man. I made a post the other day on Instagram and it said something about the mean world syndrome. You know, the mean world, like it was the idea that the mainstream media promotes this image of the world that makes it come across particularly mean, like meaner than it really, you know, might be. And I made that post about the mean world syndrome to try to make a point, like go outside, turn off your TV, go visit with some people. And you'll find that like the world isn't as bad as you might think. And I was kind of blown away by the feedback I got on that post because it wasn't nearly as positive as I would have thought. Like it was, people were a little bit more bought into this and entrenched in this big fear, this fear mongering, suspicion mongering, hate and division mongering culture that our media is working really diligently to compose and to maintain. And it kind of blew me away because this is, depending on, you know, what your cultural background is, you know, this may or may not be a special time of the year, but you know, any time of year is a good special time to take stock of what you have and to be thankful for what and who you have in your life. And it's pretty clear that there's a lot of distraction going on at the societal level, and that's seeping down into the minds of, you know, of everybody that we're running into on a daily basis. So I think it's just a good time for me to remind everybody that, you know, we're all here to co-create reality together. We're here to build a more positive world, to leave this world better than we found it. And that regardless of what we see on TV, on the fear box, The majority of the people that you're going to meet are not out to get you. They're not out to take your money. They're not out to take your job. They're not out to take things for free from you. They're not out to hurt you or to do anything like that. And I just can't say enough. Take this time of the year to get outside, to go get out into nature, to turn your TV off, and go rediscover the world and your neighbors for yourself, because everything's a lot more beautiful than the TV would have us think it was.
And I kind of want to speak to that if I could. You know, I feel like the fact that we're seeing so much change take place even on the political scale is indicative of how much is happening on the spiritual scale if people actually take the time to absorb and look at it. You know, you're 1,000% correct. The TV, Fearbox, mainstream media, all this stuff, we know what they're doing. And that's why you know, what I'm saying is it represents what we're going through. There are so many people trying to, as you said before, renew the world, do different things, become change, and live a better life. But that's not necessarily being displayed on what we think of as news, media, and everything else. And I think that's kind of why, to a degree, I don't want to say I let people down, but I have to figure out a way to shine the light and point out like our achievement, our acknowledgments, and all the other good things that do come with this. Like while we're seeing the destruction, or at least this, I don't want to say destruction because that kind of sounds harsh, but while we're seeing this change take place on the political scale, you know, that just means so much more, I think, for everything else that we see taking place in the world. And I think that's one of the things that people can't really appreciate enough. You know, I feel like we've been on a roller coaster all year, and that does something to people. You know, that really does do something to the psyche, to the mentality, and we're not really necessarily taking the time to look at that. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, no, it does. It's look, it's the end of the year. You know, this is a winter time, and we, as human beings, our bodies, our minds, our spirits, we're subject to cycles just like the earth, just like the planets, all the way down to our circadian rhythm in our body, from the time we wake up until high noon, until the sun goes down, until midnight. These are all scales and cycles that are represented at different levels of reality. And we're coming to a close on the year. We're coming into winter time, and you know we need to drop our antlers. You know, we need to drop our leaves. You know, there's a reason that the trees shed their leaves in the winter time. You know, it's to make room for new foliage, to buckle down for the winter, let the old die off, so that they can be renewed again. You know, whenever the sun comes back out in the springtime. And this is an ideal time for conscious people to start talking more about the accomplishments of our neighbors and of ourselves and of our friends and family and the people that we see on the street. With you guys as a news outlet, you'll do such an awesome job of covering so much stuff that people don't realize, a lot of stuff that's kind of hard to even look at sometimes. It's certainly hard to dig deeply into as a researcher. But it's a good time of year to be reporting on some good stuff too, and maybe that's how you guys shine your light a little bit brighter during this time. We're coming into the winter in maybe more ways than one, and so we'll need all the torches we can.
I love how you're speaking in symbolism.
And it's, you know, what are words for if not to paint pictures?
That's what we were talking about last time.
Yeah.
It's etymology, the power of words.
That's it, you know. And it's something that we've lost among so many other things. You know, in this community, we talk about Atlantis and civilizations and lost technology and all that kind of stuff, right alongside spirituality. But what we don't talk a lot about, except for in some specialized circles, is the power of language. And I think we talked about last time, like, the power of different definitions for knowing and for gnosis and for love and all kinds of other stuff. And it's such a true thing, you know, speaking in symbolism, particularly with symbolism that represents, you know, the natural world. And when we start to see ourselves as a part of nature and start to think and behave and conduct ourselves accordingly. You know, I think that that's when we'll, it's indicative of reconnecting to your natural roots and your natural values, and that results in, I think, a lot more stable, sustainable happiness over the long term at the individual and societal level. That's something that I would like to see a resurgence of.
Is the expansion of words, or the, I guess, the utilization of words, or
the utility of a more natural symbolic. Well, we talked about the resurgence of the need for resurgence of right brain thinking in this time. We talked about that on our last visit. When was that? Months ago, 7-8 months ago.
About back in March, I think.
Yeah.
And I'll put the link for people in the description bar below. I think March 24th was the episode.
That was a great talk.
Powerful. Oh man, well this is going to be even greater. You know what we're starting to get into, and I'm sure we'll discuss it throughout the episode to a degree, is the concept of magic. That was one of the not even a concept. I think it's like a smothered reality, and I'll get into that later on. But I had reached out to Adam. Because he had put up a post, and I was like, "Wow, this is crazy," and I was like, "Hey, you know, let's talk about magic." We had a back and forth, and you can never really fully dig deep into these things over texts or over any kind of messaging system. And so I wanted to have him on to talk about that and to connect it to this particular segment. You know, again, this year, people kind of, with all this stuff going on, people need to remember their power. Remember themselves, remember how to just control themselves or pull things in, like really, really practicing like appreciation and gratuity and all kinds of other small little patterns that will reveal larger truths to people. And I think, you know, magic, and I say this with quotes, it kind of scares people. You know, obviously people within the church tell you it's demonic. And it's because, again, it's calling into... calling into the world your own essence and using your willpower to dictate things. That's my approach on it. And we'll get into these types of things. But I think it's important, as Adam said, you know, to use this time frame as the year is coming towards an end to think about, again, the achievements that we have had, the progress that has been made, the changes that have taken place, and so much more. And it's like you said, dropping our leaves, you know, renewing the world. Being a part of nature, taking part in that cycle. You know, people think, and I talked about this recently, unfortunately, I feel like people are waiting for more chaotic things to take place, and that just kind of shows where people's heads are at. Necessarily trying to... So go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think that's fair. I think in a lot of circles, people are sort of... they either have their heads in the sand, or their fingers in their ears, and kind of just sitting off in a corner on their iPad, hoping that everything will just change, you know. But it doesn't really matter how you look at it. Like, either something catastrophic is going to have to happen, or something just really magnificent and wonderful is going to have to happen. I tend to think that the magnificent, wonderful team is actually winning, and I think that's obvious because of the insane effort that you see from the mainstream media and from the big social media companies that are suppressing and censoring a lot of amazing information. They wouldn't have to do that type of stuff if there wasn't a massive movement that was reaching critical mass.
And there's it's a out new in Woodstock the open too.
But yeah, there's a new Woodstock concert being put together for the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. You know, you could have 500,000 people or more out there at this Woodstock thing. And, you know, think about what Woodstock represented 50 years ago for the consciousness movement and for what was going on there. A lot of the phenomenal... I've been really wrapped up in this this Medicine Tribe conscious music collective that's been going on. I discovered these guys just a few months ago, Trevor Hall and Nako and Satsang, and I've just been raving about them on the podcast and on the Instagram platform, really, I guess. But these guys are changing the world. These guys and ladies, you know, they're changing the world, and it's this totally organic, grassroots, underground thing that isn't relying on social media to do or mainstream media or mainstream, you know, recording labels and stuff like that. These guys are just out there, just doing their thing all organically. And it's like, I don't know, it's just really cool conscious music. We're getting a glimpse of that for the first time in a long time. And it's gaining a lot of ground quickly.
I agree. You know, I think because we're seeing such an open, I guess just open chaos, you know, that's why you see them fighting back so much, is because you do have so many people aligning themselves to the good, or at least trying to follow that path of righteousness, to follow that path of light, to follow that path of good and optimism. I was talking about this with our previous guest about how right now I think a lot of people are starting to discover that essence of good, that essence of righteousness, that power of just, like, I don't know, optimism, positivity. I don't know. I'm not sure how you would describe it, because I don't think people have really been able to delve deep into those constructs, or at least that reality. And what I mean by that is, you said it just now, with mainstream media and everybody doing everything that they're doing, that just shows that good is winning. People are rediscovering their powers, rediscovering their essence, and trying to figure out, you know, what, not necessarily weapons to have, but what paths to go down, what culture to create, what mindsets to encourage. And it seems, it's going to always seem like that. You know, people think that good is just supposed to be easy and natural. You know, you have to fight for what's good. You have to fight for what's right. That's why I feel like that's why we have so much chaos taking place, is because it's too easy to go down the path of just, like, of insanity. You know, it's very hard to just to dutifully go after the right things every single day, but we're having that. I really think, you know, people are, and that's kind of why it has this weird feeling these days. I feel like that might just be me, but I think that's where we're at these days. People are trying to discover their essence and trying to discover their power, and we're just doing that. We're doing it outside of, as you said, mainstream media, outside of big banks, outside of all these other constructs that have previously fallen. We are now starting to create something new. Let me get your thoughts on this, and then we'll take a quick break. A thought I toss around sometimes with guests and even myself is the concept of revolution versus renaissance. And the reason I say that is because revolution, I feel like, is just a political aspect of just kicking things down the can. The concept of renaissance is where we're actually introducing these new ideas, creating a culture of positivity, awareness, optimism, righteousness, wholesomeness, decency, just trying to be good. What are your thoughts on the concept of revolution versus renaissance?
Man, what a beautiful question that is. I hope I can do it justice, but, you know, renaissance...
We got some time.
You know, when you think about Renaissance, you think about great minds, you know, great people, great thinkers, great artists, great doers, great lovers, great poets, great, you know, all of these. What you don't think about is troops. You don't think about warfare. You don't think about weaponry. You know, you don't think about politics or politicians or banking or any of that. When you say Renaissance, you know, you conjure up this whole beautiful landscape of you know, what makes us best. Or what were the best components that make us who we are? And that's exactly what we are doing here. You know, that's one of the things that I didn't know you were going to bring that up, but I was really hoping you would, because I had some notes here, and that was one of my things I wanted to talk about, was this sort of renaissance that we see.
We didn't talk
place.
Before the show.
Yeah,
we
no,
didn't
we
talk
we
about, you know, show notes or anything. We were just like, hey, how's your Thanksgiving? That's
no,
all we did.
That's it. And we didn't know. And it's a beautiful synchronicity. And I had another synchronicity right before this, because I wanted to talk about the rise of the divine masculine within this. I know we kind of touched on it last time, but I really want to dig into it more. But I'll tell you, right before we hopped on the show, I got a DM from one of my followers that's been around for a long time, and, you know, we talked quite a bit. He's over in the UK, and he was talking about starting a podcast, and I was asking him, of course, I told him that was awesome, and I was really excited to hear about it, because he's such a sharp, cool guy. And I said, well, what's it going to be about particularly? And he said, well, the big thing for me is I just feel, you know, driven by this concept of the divine masculine that's rising right now. And you know, it just blew my mind because I that was already in my notes to talk to you about. It's more or less one of the themes or sub themes from my book Wayfinder that I've been working on now for about a year. And, you know, so the, yeah, there's a lot of synchronicities flying around, for sure. But, yeah, the Renaissance question, that's what we're seeing happen here. And Renaissance doesn't require troops. It doesn't require military might. It just requires, a lot of people lighting campfires and then letting other people come light their torches off their campfires and carry them off into the darkness to light up the woods. You know, the wolves won't come around a campfire, and the wolves won't come around a tribe of people that are armed with the fire. And the fire is really just the gnosis. It's the knowledge. It's the love. It's the realization of our own essence within us and our own capacity for compassion versus the capacity for fear that they want to foment. You know, they being obviously the people that a revolution would occur against or whatever. But, yeah, the Renaissance comes from within. It comes from within each one of us. And then we all light each other's torches going forward. I heard a guy, I was talking to a guy who was a blues musician. I was down on a border town, out in West Texas called Terlingua. And we were talking about how this little beautiful border town with this little cantina, and it was a ghost town and all this stuff. I asked him, so what do you do when a town like this, you know, whenever the secret gets out and people just start swarming in here and just take over this town and just, you know, such a beautiful little cool town. And he said, you know, the muse always moves. The muse always moves. The energy, the spirit that is, you know, that is present at the second or third tier within all people that drives us to want to go out into the desert or out into the wilderness and find a small, you know, community of light-minded people, you know, that spirit isn't going to go away just because the place goes away. And I would say that spirit is what's rising at the time of a Renaissance. It's that spirit of mystery and yearning for more outside of the material and outside of, you know, it's like the embers of a flame that are being stoked to combust into a roaring bonfire, you know. And that's what the Renaissance is to me. It's a big roaring bonfire. It's a phoenix, you know. These ideas and concepts you keep. You know, another thing about Renaissance is, and I could go on about this forever, but, you know, everybody here knows that I'm big into shamanism, but I'm also big into hermetics. And, you know, the hermetic books, these teachings from ancient times, you know, they keep coming back. You know, they keep coming back at times of Renaissance. And you go through times like the Dark Ages where, you know, you don't have really any sort of art or writing or record keeping or any of that stuff. And then, of course, the Renaissance comes and bursts out of that. Well, you know, what a flame doesn't just spontaneously burst into existence, you know what I mean? But there seem to be these hermetic teachings, these sort of axiomatic teachings that have existed for a very long time that are, you know, preeminent ideologies, but I guess just ideas that have existed as long as, you know, as long as people have existed or before. And it's the idea of duality and oneness and a lot of the things that have been sort of co-opted by the New Age, you know, people, for better or worse. And we're in the midst of that Renaissance. You know, be on the lookout for a lot of occult books and esoteric books and hermetic books, you know, that are popping up on social media a lot more. People weren't reading these books 80 years ago or 100 years ago, you know. I mean, to some extent they were with Blavatsky and the Theosophical Society and stuff, but that was a good example of it. You know, they had a sort of a mini Renaissance in the 1920s or so before World War II came in. But yeah, we're in the midst of a beautiful Renaissance right now. Keep watching.
I truly believe that. I was talking about this, you know. Oh, you know what? I'll say this and then we'll take a quick break. I feel like people are, I don't, you know, everybody always says that they can see when people are tuned in or turned off. And I really feel like it is true to some degree, but I also feel like it's very divisive. You know, alchemists talk about this luminiferous ether, right? This luminiferous fire within people, this spiritual essence that people have, right? And how you're supposed to use this type of ether that's around you and just feed it that fire with inside of you. And that's truly how I feel. Is I think a lot of people have this little calcifer, this little piece of fire within people's energy or within their heart. And what we're seeing right now is a smothering. It's kind of what I mentioned before, the smothered reality, the smothered magic reality. It's in people, and we're seeing them through things like mainstream media, the GMOs, the chemtrails, all this other stuff. They're trying to smother that fire. But what we're doing right here, having this kind of kinship, having this kind of fellowship and discussing these types of things, is we're just trying to sprinkle a little bit of magic fire dust on people's luminiferous fire inside to try to help remind them of who they are, so that they can have that gnosis, so that they can have that power, so that they can really try to remember who they are. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go anywhere. This is Adam of Shamanic Philosophy and Freedom Faction over here on Fellowship and Freedom. We'll be right back right after this.
Salutations, my friends. I'm here to talk to you about, that's right, CBD oil. CBD oil can reduce the risk of relapse among alcohol and cocaine addicts, and you know they're trying to flood us with both. According to a 2013 study published in the British Journal of Clinical Pharmacology, CBD was proven to have these benefits: relieving pain and inflammation, having antipsychotic effects, reducing anxiety, helping to fight cancer, relieving nausea, treating seizures, lowering incidences of diabetes, and also promoting cardiovascular health. Realize that in 2014, Purdue Pharma received FDA approval for an opioid drug that claimed to help curb the opioid addiction. This will actually help you curb your usage of opioids, as well as your reliance upon them. And remember, guys and gals, stay vigilant. Expose lies and share truth. This is Noisera, Freedom Faction, out.
Peace, prosperity, and salutations. I am Yurima Karama, motivational speaker, artist, liberationist, and founder of The Unity Walk, a 501c3 charitable organization that is geared towards the liberation and unification of melanated communities around the country. Our next Unity Walk is taking place December 1st in New York at 1942 Amsterdam Avenue at 156th Street. So if you are in the New York City area, please come out for that. Again, this is towards the liberation and unification of black melanated communities around this country. Come out and be a part of history in the making. One. We in a war.
And we are back. That's right. Back in action. And I'm glad to see and hear you good folks are still there. Adam, my man, how are you?
Good, brother. What's cracking on your end?
A little bit of everything. Now, you know, we went to break talking about so much. I hope good people, I hope the listeners thought about themselves, the mysteries of the universe, and more. And one of the things that you had talked about that I want to get into with you is things like the divine masculine and the sacred feminine. I feel like this is a very, very important issue, because people, we were talking with our engineer about this in between the breaks. That's why I love our team. They're all so conscious about this type of stuff. They get where we're going. You know, we look at this type of stuff through the current Western lens. So it's kind of seen as taboo. It's kind of seen as strange. It's kind of seen as foreign. You know, and I personally have an issue with the politicization of it. But this idea of transgenderism, of transhumanism, and these are two different things, because I think transgenderism has been with us throughout history. You can look it up. Even the Native Americans have the so-called two spirit, one body, five genders in their culture. So they're fully aware of multiple genders being in one individual. The transhumanism aspect, I feel like, is the science, biohacking, machine implanting aspect of it. And I have to explain all these things because the divine masculine and the sacred feminine, I feel like, are where our current age is shifting. Like, they're supposed to be, that's what I feel like we're supposed to be discovering, is the essence of each gender, testosterone and estrogen, and what we're seeing is the muddying of these two. So I guess to kind of pitch it your way, Adam, instead of talking, because you're the guest, what are your thoughts on things like transhumanism, transgenderism, and we'll get into the divine masculine and the sacred feminine.
That's all?
Thanks. Yeah, man, that's all.
It's like so much stuff.
I know. I know, I'm sorry. Loaded question.
Yeah, okay, well, so for the next 3 hours, yeah.
You're the guy.
So, transhumanism. Do you guys watch the Elon Musk, Joe Rogan interview?
Yes, I did.
That guy's like a robot, man.
He talks and tweets.
Yeah, he does. He really does. And I get it. It's like he's got a worldview that's so big and complex that he's not yet quite figured out how to bite-size enough of his vision to, like, give it to people in, like, full coherent amounts. So he's just, like, chops off little bite-sized pieces of his worldview and just throws it at people. But he's brilliant. He caught a lot of heat after that interview in a lot of circles. You know, we were at the Earthkeeper conference, I think like within two days of that interview or something like that. And there were so many people at this conference that were just like, oh my God, Elon Musk is such a transhumanist and he's such a dirtbag and all this stuff. But like, he kind of laid out his views on the transhumanism thing, at least as it, you know, as it pertains to like the microchipping and all that stuff and merging with AI. Like he was against it. I think the interview with Elon Musk is super important to me because this is a guy that if you understand how technology works, and I do, if you understand how businesses work, and I do, and you hear that interview, you realize that this guy was really, really scared of this technology developing. He was really, really worried about it. And he was like using all the clout that he had to go to the White House and tell people like the whole transhumanist, you know, AI merging thing was
all
a real
50
threat.
Senators. He went to like all 50 senators, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And this is like Smedley Butler going to Congress and telling them in 1937 or whatever that Rockefeller and George Bush's daddy and all them were in the DuPonts and Goodyear family and Carnegie. They were all going to pay him to overthrow the government and install this fascist oligarchy. Well, Smedley Butler went and did that, and then, you know, 70 or 80 years later, no one knows his name, but then all these people have essentially taken over the government, you know, not long after that. I think it's a scary idea that we might look back on Elon Musk like we do Smedley Butler and be like, yeah, apparently 80 years ago there was this guy named Elon Musk that nobody listened to and no one's ever heard of now, but if people would have listened to him, we wouldn't be working for robot congressmen. You know what I mean?
Well, that was his whole point behind building up the Neuralace or the Neuralink company, and to get the Neuralace, he says that, you know, automation or assimilation is already going to happen. Our interface with robots, brain-to-machine interface, is definitely going to happen. So his thought process was to go ahead and just, I guess, jump the shark. You know, build his own interface. That way, the AI doesn't build an interface for him. He wants to try to interact with the AI because he's already aware that it's conscious. He's already aware that there's some kind of sentience with this AI that's being built, you know, and that can be that opens up a whole nother discussion. But his step towards that is saying, look, these things are going to happen. We need to build some kind of road, some kind of checkpoint, some kind of roadblock, because we don't want to have it have full control. You don't want something that you cannot control to have full control of you. So you need to figure out some kind of way to interface with it. And so his response was to create the neural lace, and that's essentially what we've. What a lot of people think as the Matrix, you know, as that thing that jacks you into the computer, into cyberspace, and, you know, that's literally where we are. Because again, that interview was really, really powerful. I'm not gonna lie, and I kind of got upset because, you know, you have somebody like Elon Musk going on Joe's show, and Joe's just getting hammered. But I would too, because you're in the presence of somebody who's going to talk to Congress, talking to senators, you know, trying to raise the awareness about all the AI threats and he's trying to just distill so much information in such a short amount of time. It's crazy. So I would definitely advocate for people to go check that out. It gives you the mind of the technocrat, the mind of the people who are in the background right now.
Yeah. Elon is a crazy smart guy, but he's got it. You know, he's got a good perspective on the transhumanist thing, and AI is just one piece of that. But I mean, I think it is what it is. It's the merging with AI thing. I'm kind of with Elon Musk on this. I mean, if something insanely catastrophic, like an EMP or a solar flare or something like that, if we don't get some big coronal mass ejection from the sun to fry all of our electronics, AI seems pretty imminent. But, you know, there are professors, you know, doctors out there of geology and stuff, guys like Robert Schock, that would say that we're about due for a solar flare. And they would say that a lot of archaeoastronomy points to that. A lot of other people in the community would say that other weird shit's going to happen. Pole shifts and stuff like that. So I think what we're seeing with the transhumanist thing and with a lot of the densification of a lot of these other timelines and a lot of agendas and cycles and stuff that are, you know, seem to be sort of, everything's compressing, everything's getting heavier and more dense. And time and all the events that are happening in it, and everybody has a sense of that, I think, if you stop and pay attention to it. And we're about to see, I think, something really interesting happen. Something's got to give, you know. And the AI thing is like, you know, 10 years away, within the next 10, 15 years, you know, of like near total integration with AI. And if anybody's watched Westworld, you know. Just so you know, the Westworld, you know, movie may seem really crazy to some people. But like, that's really Sumerian mythology played out with Anthony Hopkins, you know, that's Inky and Enlil, Bernard and what's his face, you know what I mean? Robert or whatever. Like there's a lot of old stories that are being retold. And that's why, you know, like I say, when you mentioned Renaissance earlier, that's what you tend to see happening at these times of Renaissance throughout history. Is this is when, it's like even that Coldplay song, you know, I've been reading books of old, the legends and the myths, you know, he starts the song out that way. And you just start hearing these references to ancient legends and ancient myths. And it's almost like the realization of our own story when we look back in retrospect is what's fueling this inferno, this return of the gnosis, this, you know, the muse. It's returning to that essence, returning to our center. But
let's delve into that a little bit more if we can. We'll come back to the divine masculine, sacred feminine stuff, because I think that's important. You know, you to just get this stuff on record. You know, you say you're talking about you study shamanism, clearly shamanic philosophy. Subscribe to this podcast, hermeticism, and etymology. All these other things that are important as far as the advancement of knowledge versus, you know, this dark age that some people can kind of see forming over here. I see a lot of different paths for humanity right now. You know, the path of the transhumanism merging with AI, people rediscovering, as we said before, the divine masculine and the sacred feminine, or people heading in this dark age to where, you know, there's an absence of knowledge, there's an absence of truth, and there's an absence of all these things. And these it sounds strange, but I'm not sure. Like, what are your thoughts on that, if you don't mind me asking? Because I think it's important that we kind of delve in this a little bit more. It's cycles of history, of human history, are important. You know, this is why you see, I forget who wrote the book, but they've done a study looking at history, looking at economic periods before wars, after wars, peacetime, and all these things. There's certain cycles that humans go through. It's like every 80 years. Right, we go through this period of transformation, of transition, and we're about due for some kind of either cataclysm, or some kind of massive awakening. So, if you could just delve a little bit more into that whole thing,
I'll just come out with it. I believe in alternate timelines, right? So that's an understanding, yes, that I have. I'm a big adherent to that concept. And a lot of people I know personally are, there's some weird perceptual shit that happens whenever you get into certain states of mind where you can start understanding the way that alternate timelines would work. And when you start to understand this sort of binary source code that makes up all things, like a lot of quantum physicists are now getting into, and they're finding, you know, this sort of binary code seems to be imprinted into the fabric of our reality. And you start thinking about existence and reality as a big torus field of energy that's always flowing in and out in every direction, and that you're sort of the center of it all. You know, when I start to think that way and think about these cycles of time, I start to really, I actually did a huge massive spreadsheet thing on this one time, these cycles of time. And you can see this sort of spiraling, flow of energy. If you start color coordinating things like, earth disasters, human caused disasters, even in the last, you know, few hundred years since we've been capable of things like that, or whatever, last couple hundred years. But you can start to see natural disasters, atmospheric impacts, major die-offs and extinctions, the rise and fall of civilizations, you know, the rise and fall of certain philosophical belief systems from Greece to Rome. You can start to see how these things ebb and flow. When you start, giving some sort of body to these constructs, you know, things like philosophical beliefs or whatever, you start to look at these sort of ebb and flows in history. You can see it all happening. And there's some part of me that doesn't wonder if we are not, you know, in control. And every moment we're sort of splitting off into a different timeline. And I think things get really, really condensed here very soon. And we're sort of faced with a decision of, you know, do we make a momentary decision for love or for fear? And I think we're going to see out of that some sort of a pole flip one way or another. Times get maybe close, that we was, can choose love or not.
Maybe that's the symbology of whenever people say it's a pole shift, you know, because it's not, you know, the earth flipping over. It's a pole shift. It's like the literal, the inversion, the change, the paradigm shift.
Yep.
You know, Elon Musk even said that he believes that we're in this simulated reality. You know, with it, and this is just something for people to think about, especially with us moving towards renewable energies, free energy, and things like this. With how many computers are running, how many different algorithms and codes and just simulations, to some degree, they would be able to kind of simulate our reality and hijack it. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, you talked about this before with the series of ones and zeros. You know, things can be coded. And I don't want to say that they have the formula to reality, because that's almost blasphemous. But I think people should take the time to step back and, you know, kind of look at, you know, the time frame that we're in, where we're talking about creating AI. We're talking about time shifts. We're talking about paradigm shifts. We're talking about so many different things that clearly we are in for something else. Now, you mentioned it before, alternate timelines, you know, things like the Mandela effect. What's going on with CERN, the Large Hadron Collider? You know, it's been very, very quiet this year. A lot of people don't really talk about some of the developments that have happened. But I'm not sure if you saw, but just the other week, they said that we were going to be hit with a dark matter hurricane. I'm not sure if you saw that pop up in the news.
No, I didn't see that.
I'll see if I can try to get the article up in the time. But they said that we're going to be hit with a dark matter hurricane for the next 5 million years. And I said, oh, well, that's a little bit crazy to
that's
think
comforting.
About. But I don't... Yeah, right. Thank you. We're going to be hit with dark matter for the next 5 million years. But I thought of it as a more symbolic interpretation, a more esoteric and occult interpretation. Where does this energy come from? And people say they're not able to measure dark matter. They're only able to measure the effects of dark matter on the things around it. And so what that makes me think is we're seeing this essence or this energy resurge. It's coming back over the planet. It's coming back over Earth. And people are either A, being able to interact with it. It's empowering them. It's doing something to them. Or it's, I don't know. here's where it is. It says, published in Physical Review D, a study led by Sierra and O'Hare from the University of Zaragoza in Spain looked at the collection of nearby stars moving in the same direction known as the S1 stream. These are believed to be the remnants of a dwarf galaxy that was swallowed by the Milky Way billions of years ago. And I'll put this link in there in the description bar below so people can check it out. But my point on going on this little side tangent on things like dark matter in relation to alternate timelines is I do agree with you. I think we are seeing things condense. I think we are seeing all these other timelines, certain possibilities, realities. We're seeing them kind of converge. And I think that is because, as we talked about in the first segment of the show, we're seeing people step into, I don't want to say those higher selves, because that creates, you know, authority over another, but we're seeing people reach into that multidimensional.
They're coming back to wholeness.
Yes.
People are coming back to wholeness. So we've been living in a fractionalized, fragmented state for a long time, and this is sort of coming back to the singularity. This is the collapsing of all of these disparate, you know, cosmic, you know, portions of ourselves that are all returning back like splinters into the whole. And it's that's where that density, that feeling of density is coming from, is it's literally all these different, call them dimensions or whatever you want, but it's these sort of other versions of yourself that was up to better and less shit, you know, on different timelines, vibrating at different frequencies, doing different things, thinking slightly different things. These things are all collapsing back in together. And that's why you get these weird feelings of deja vu that have been happening I've been having more people than I've ever had. You know how it is. You get a lot of messages from people. I've had so many people messaging me about deja vu. It's crazy. Way more than any other time of the year. More than any time I've ever seen since I've had my podcast.
Well, we had the Paranormal Perspective for Halloween, and we had a caller call in, and she basically talked about how she herself felt like she was not from this reality. And she says she keeps getting glimpses of a city where she's never been. She has visions of like this whole other reality.
Yeah,
and what's even more strange is her story is not isolated. Like, I've heard that before.
Yeah, man, it's you know, it's like so many other things when we talk about etymology and the words that we use in the pharmacy industry and in the psychology industry and stuff. You know, you call it schizophrenia, but I mean, it's really just like tuned into a different dimension, at least partially. You know, we have different layers of consciousness, and when one or more layers is tuned into a different frequency, we can. There are other, you know, realms that are created by our thoughts, or in some way are made up of our thoughts, or our thoughts are already there, and we're catching on to that now. But ancient people talked about this, and a lot of different shamanic cultures do a lot of different kinds of exploration of other realms, and a lot of them come back with very similar stories, you know. And you start looking at these sort of dream worlds and the spirit world and stuff like that, and they start, you know, getting described in very similar ways across different cultures. And you know, I think we're sort of seeing all of those realms sort of tightening in on each other, I guess.
I'll say this and we'll take a break, because this is all important. You know, I've had people that come on the show that talk about premonitions, that have visions, you know, and I think this is all very important. They say that madmen are the prophets of God, and I don't really think, you know, I'm not trying to say every crazy person is the mouth of God or anything like that, but I think that there is a seed of wisdom in everything that we kind of see happening right now, and people who are bestowed these kinds of gifts and who can not peer into the future but are given visions of the future, that to me makes me think that these people are allowed to help change the course of events for other individuals. Like, we're being poured, like, I want to say the Spirit of God is, like, pouring out on everybody. Everybody is developing some kind of ability, some kind of gift. They're tapping into something else within them, I think, and that's what we were talking about at the start of the show. People need to rediscover what that is. They're having all of this energy, all of this essence, as we just talked about, this dark matter hurricane for 5 million years. You know, they're having all this energy poured out onto them, and they're just like, what do we do? Don't take selfies. Don't show us pictures of your cat or of your food. that's supposed to be giving, that energy is supposed to be investing you, invigorating you, empowering you. There is something happening in this time frame, and you know, it's powerful. It really is, you know, and we'll get into this on the other side. Things like the layers of consciousness, you know, states of being. I want to hear about those medicine tribes and that conscious music and stuff about that. We'll get into that and more with our guest, Adam of Shamanic Philosophy, on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back, right after this. Awesome. You guys, thank you for I'm going to try to do this. We're doing a show, believe it or not, and this is the audience. So I want to say thank you, audience, for tuning in and listening to this epic edition of Fellowship of Freedom. I'm your host, Noizera, and I have our guest, Adam of Shamanic Philosophy, joining us. And this segment is going to be a little bit, it's going to be interesting, don't you think, Adam?
Yeah, for sure. We're going to have the best time.
I think to start it off, do you remember that commercial, that Michael Jordan commercial, where he was like always with that chick and saying, anything you can do, I can do better? Like, you remember that?
Yes.
Well, I don't want to sound like a jerk, but, you know, there's just some things that I think men can do, and there's some things that women can do. And before we get into layers of consciousness, I think that it's important to kind of go, I want to set that foundation, because I've said it on the show too many times. It might sound creepy, but I love women. I swear, I really do. I'm taken, but I love women. And I think it's important to highlight these types of things. Women can do certain things that men cannot do. What we're seeing with feminism, and I've talked about it with various guests, is they don't care about the actual female. You summed it up perfectly. They're stripping females of their femininity. And guys, we're being emasculated. We're being feminized. We're being sissified. We're being pussified. That's just the reality of things. They're teaching men to be women, and they're teaching women to try to be men. And we talked about this at the kind of start of the show, the idea of the divine masculine and the sacred feminine. And I said it on the show, and I'll say it again. I love women. I think we need to understand each gender and all the biology and everything that comes with that independently of one another, rather than smashing them together. Now, when we look at these types of things, there are seeds of truth in everything. And what we're going to be discussing in this episode, or in this particular segment, is just that, things like the divine masculine and the sacred feminine, the energies that both pull on. Adam, my friend, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Jordan Peterson has talked a lot about this with the lost boys, you know, this idea of the lost young men that feel disenfranchised or connected or tossed aside by society, by their family. You know, there's a lot of discussion in the universities and elsewhere, politically and philosophically, about this oppressive patriarchy that's been established and maintained, and that, you know, it's become sort of just taken for granted that if you are a man in this society, that you're a part of that oppressive patriarchy. And, you know, obviously it is just an assumed premise that there even is an oppressive patriarchy that exists. But what we have is, by design, a system, a culture that's maintained by the mainstream media and by these big corporations. We have a culture that disempowers men, and it disempowers women, all under the guise of feminism. And when you look back in different societies and cultures that have existed for thousands of years, you can see what happens when a society reaches a really proper natural balance between the divine masculine and the sacred feminine energies that exist at the micro and macro levels in people and civilizations. But there's a beautiful thing that happens when a society becomes balanced, is it starts breeding people that are balanced. It starts raising happier, healthier, more well-rounded people with a better understanding of themselves and their neighbors and of nature. And it makes it very difficult for for big corporations or powerful psychopaths to control. And this is just a natural sort of defense mechanism of a balanced culture, is it just it makes it difficult, just like a healthy body makes it difficult for a parasite to come in and take control. As above, so below, as within, so without. So that's sort of the hermetic look at that. I mean, everything is everything. A healthy body is a healthy civilization. And so when you have a healthy balance, you can call it
and
a
your
pH
body is
balance.
A temple.
Your body is a temple. And you have a pH balance in your body, which, you know, make no mistake, this is an electrical charge we're talking about here. You know, negative 25 millivolts or positive 25 millivolts with zero in the middle at 7.2 pH or whatever it is. And you can have a pH balance in society. It can be too acidic or it can be too alkaline. You can look at it that way. It's too left brain or too right brain, too masculine, too feminine, too materialist or too spiritual or too literal or too symbolic. Or, you know, you can look at it however you want to look at it. But we have to accept some truths about or some basic premises about the nature of duality. Particularly with regard to genders, and it doesn't really have to have much, if anything, to do with physical gender or sexual orientation or whether a person is transgender or they're a fifth gender of some kind. None of those labels are really important. What we're looking for in this conversation, any conversation about duality, is to understand the gender principles behind a thing. Not the labels that you put on a thing, but you know, to be protective, right? For instance, is you can call that a male trait or a masculine trait, to be protective, to be loving. You can consider that a feminine trait, but we don't have to say that only women can be loving, only men can be protective, you know, or anything like that. But it's just understanding this sort of life force that exists within us, the calories that we eat, the energy that we consume, that we then put into our lives. How do we apply that energy? Is it done? Is our life force put into more masculine activity and thought, or more feminine activity and thought, or more of a balanced sort of activity and thought? And, you know, we're living at a time when I think that balance is trying to be found more than ever. That's sort of the nature of this renaissance, and it's going to come from a resurgence of the divine masculine and the sacred feminine. And when I see all these conscious pages and all these conscious artists, oh my God!
Yeah,
I took a drink of water.
I was like, you left. Be hanging on the cliffhanger, man.
God, that was the worst. I'm so sorry.
Yes.
because every smart person takes a drink halfway through a sentence. It was like a Marco Rubio
it's
move.
Okay. I've had people take eating steak on the show, hanging out. You know, it is what it is. If you're comfortable.
I did my very best to make sure I had my dinner done before the show. Although we'll have to do this during like normal daytime hours. Another time, whenever my brain's functioning properly and I'm not taking drinks halfway through a sentence. Where was I? So we have this resurgence of the masculine and the feminine. Renaissances happen. When you have that, this is a time when I think it's really cool. Within the conscious community, we have all of these beautiful women of, it seems like, all ages, but they are from, you know, 20 years old to, you know, they're a lot of them are young women running these conscious pages, but they're re-empowering women, I think, again, in such a beautiful, healthy, naturalistic kind of way. You guys might have seen them. You can like click on their page and they, you know, they have like pink and purple and glittery stuff and crystals everywhere, but they're like beautiful, intelligent, empowering women that are delivering beautiful, intelligent, empowering messages to other women. It's so cool. I love that. What I'd like to see is a little bit more of that on the other side. And I think that may be something that's coming now. And that is sort of that's the thrust of my book, Wayfinder. That's the thrust of where my podcast is is headed, where all my thoughts are headed these days, is toward the restoration of the balanced man, of the properly balanced man.
Yes.
And that's a man who spends his time in nature, because you need to. We all need to, men and women. But for a man, we need to spend time in nature and get to know ourselves. And the biggest thing is we got to learn to have a healthy relationship with our ego and our temper and our feelings, because we're sort of, I was just having this conversation with a buddy of mine the other day over at the house, but as men, we're brought up, you know, believing and living that we have to, like the only emotion that we're allowed to show is anger, which, you know, anger comes from essentially from fear. It's a fear response. And we know that there are only two feelings, two energies that make up everything that is God, that is the universe, and that's fear and love. Those are the only two energies. You can look at those as positive and negative polarities, or male and female, or whatever, but that's it. And so as a man, we've only ever been encouraged as young men to show, you know, our sort of Satan response, our lowest demon response, the fear response, the anger response. And culturally, we've done a poor job of, because of that imbalance in men, of addressing feelings in our ladies, right? Or in people on the other side of the track. So our women don't feel like they're being listened to, because guys don't want to hear that shit. You know why we don't want to hear that shit? Because no one wanted to hear that shit when we were kids. You know what I mean? Dad didn't want to hear that shit. None of our friends wanted to hear it, because none of their dads and none of their friends wanted to hear it. So then we get married and, like, we don't want to hear it. You know what I mean? So it's a spiral.
And bad cycles of truth.
Yeah, dude. And it's a spiral like anything else. And the only way that you interrupt the spiral is through mindfulness. So what I'm trying to do is get men back into, first of all, back into nature, because there's also other imbalances that come from, you know, so many men that are in office jobs and stuff like that, or that are sitting and sedentary behind a desk all the time. Like, that shit drains your testosterone, man. It just sucks the life force out of you. And, you know, if you don't get out into nature and combat that, then it just dwindles over time. You don't just develop, you know, sexual dysfunction and lower back problems and all kinds of other stuff, because it's all root chakra stuff. You know what I mean? Root and sacral chakra stuff. You start getting energy blockages down there from sitting all day, not moving, not running, not twisting or doing any of that stuff. And it's you know, go look at the problems that you develop from root chakra blockages and sacral chakra blockages, and then start looking at gastrointestinal problems and parasitic stuff. And there's a lot of bad shit that happens when you don't have that balance. So we got to get men back into active roles, because that's, you know, if a man is not formidable physically, he knows it. And that doesn't mean he has to be a big juiced up asshole, right? But just if a guy isn't physically formidable, he's aware of it, and it has an impact. You may not even know as a guy that you are living in a state of mind in which you are aware of your own physical incompetence or lack of, you know, whatever. But you will notice a difference whenever you start working on that physical aspect of yourself. And for me, it just had to be outdoor stuff. It had to be outdoors. My ADD sucks. I can't go to the gym and sit there too long. I get so bored. But, like, I can go outside and, you know, climb trees and chop down trees and split wood and, you know, hack trails through the woods. And, you know, I can do that, you know, all day long. And that makes me happy. So as men, we got to find things to do to be fit physically. And we got to start, you know, getting into nature more. But one of the things that I think is important is discussing feelings with other men. And that is the thing where when you got guys that are, yes, all have their shit together and they all are living a good life and they're in touch with themselves, and you can sit around a campfire with a bunch of guys in the cold, you know, and just talk about the demons that you've been dealing with, you know, about the traumas that you've been through and how they affect how you treat the people around you, you know, the insecurities that you feel as a father, you know, trying to raise your kids to, you know, to understand things better than you did. You know, these are the things that we don't do as men very much. We don't do it very well as a society, and that's something I want to change very much. It by creating, you know, not necessarily a curriculum, but just having conversations in public, even on these podcasts right now, doing this, and just reaching out to men and letting them know that, like, we were raised wrong. You know, we were not raised in the best way, no matter how wonderful our parents were and mine were. But, like, as men, our dads, our parents didn't have the answers. They didn't have the answers. And we have access to a lot better information now. And through meditation, through just getting in touch with yourself and, you know, listening to podcasts like this, and, you know, you'll come to the realization that it really, the healthy, balanced man is the one that talks about his shit. And that's just how it goes. So we got to do that as men and as fathers and as husbands and boyfriends and everything else, as even as sons and brothers. You know, we certainly have to do it as fathers. It's like the most important thing we could do is raise young men that feel empowered and feel, you know, that live a balanced life with a good relationship with their own egos and stuff. That's what I want to do.
There's so much to tackle with that. You know, I'm not even really sure where to start, you know. Even though it's Sunday, I try to take the weekends to disconnect from all the social media stuff and everything that we do to get connected back with myself, or try to spend some time out with nature, hang out with the dogs, you know, do natural things. I wake up every day. I work out every day. On Thursdays and Fridays, you know, I hit the mountains. I try to get up at least 6,000 feet and try to spend as much time as possible out in nature. And let me tell you guys, like, the testosterone that is running through my brain these days, it's crazy. That's why these shows are becoming more condensed and more focused, because I'm trying to refine my physical body as much as my mental is. Like, clearly I'm a crazy person. I think everybody can tell.
Everyone knows.
I'm trying to live it. Yeah, everyone knows. I'm sorry, guys. You're listening to a crazy person. I'm trying to find that harmony, as you talked about before, living in that proper balance, you know, as above, so below. Get your house in order. Your body is a temple. There's so many different ways to express these types of things. And you're right. We've hit that time period to where they have disenfranchised us from our power. We have this synthetic culture where we wait to be upgraded and programmed rather than looking within and finding those answers there. You know, I'm not a father. I will be. And when I am, you know, I probably won't feel sufficient to be the father, man, because I, even today, and it's so crazy that we're talking about this, even today, I was hanging out with my old man. I had to go give him my dog, but and had to pick up my dog from Thanksgiving. Too much family stuff. Personal details.
Your dog ate so much, but, you had to, like, stay over there for Thanksgiving.
Basically.
Sounds like my dog.
It was one of those things, you know, where I got done hanging out with my man, and I told the girlfriend, you know, I was like, I could only hope to be half the man my father is. If I could do half of the things that my father has done for me, you know, I will be happy. You know, and that means from providing me with seeing overseas, traveling, you know, hunting, fishing, just like hiking, all the crazy stuff that I've had as a childhood. If I could give my child half of that, I will be happy. And what I see happening is them systematically trying to find ways to punish that, to criminalize that. You know, I hang out in the gun store right after I get done working out. I talk shop with those guys, shoot the breeze, check out weapons, see what they're working on in the back. It's awesome. And then when you guys are listening to this, you know, I love you. Right to Bear Arms. Go check them out. They're amazing. And it's the same thing. Having this kind of fellowship with men, talking about your shortcomings, talking about your pros, talking about where you're trying to improve, that has somehow been depreciated, somehow been smothered. You know, they tell you you're not supposed to have your emotions, you're not supposed to care about these types of things, you're just supposed to be this stoic rock. You know, and that's dangerous, because eventually you're going to snap. And I'm sure and the only reason I'm saying this is because I'm sure it's the same way for females, for ladies. But this is what happens with guys. We've been raised up in this society to where we've just been told, hey, look, you're not allowed to have emotions. Go do all this hard stuff. And if you break, you're crazy.
Yeah, and the it's our partners that have to pay that price too, as much as anybody else. You know, Bill Burr has like this great comedy skit. I don't know if you guys are Bill Burr people, but
oh yeah, I love Bill Burr.
And he talks about fighting with his girlfriend and stuff, and how he was raised by a dad who, you know, really had no concept of how to express feelings or any of that stuff. You know, there's just a million different outlets where you can go hear this story being told by somebody or this discussion being had by other people right now, because it's this whole concept of the rising divine masculine, although not in those words, right? It's to be found everywhere on YouTube. It's to be found everywhere out in culture. Well, not everywhere, but under the surface of the mainstream. Because the mainstream is going to talk about how toxic masculinity is driving this oppressive patriarchy and all that stuff. But in reality, what you have is, I got to keep going back to Trevor Hall and Nako and Satsang and Will Evans and the rest of the Medicine Tribe artists that are all phenomenal, Amber Lily and Wookiefoot and all of them. They're all amazing. And I got to plug these guys. I'm not affiliated with them in any way, but they've been absolutely life-changing to me and to my family, my extended family around me. You know, we're talking about the divine masculine. Like, here's a group of young men, you know, that get together and make music. You know, they got long shaggy hair, some of them dreadlocks, and some of them are bald, and you know, some of them have tribal tattoos all over their faces and stuff. And it's a bunch of really cool young men that all have really cool ideas, but they sing about their brotherhood, their sort of medicinal tribal brotherhood that they've all established, and they use a lot of natural symbolism to discuss the life of, you know, being a young man and having this brotherhood of men to go to, but again, there's the women that are involved in this same Medicine Tribe movement that are on the other end that are making some of the most beautiful and amazing, what I would call truly naturally feminist music that there is, where they're bringing their love and their light and their beauty and their flavor into their music in this profound way. And they're not doing it by shaking their asses on a camera. You know what I mean? And they're not doing it by trying to relate with young women in some really arbitrary, superficial way, but they're doing it like in this deeply beautiful, like, find yourself, face yourself, enlighten about yourself, and evolve to the next higher self. I mean, it's the message that you want young women to be empowered with, because young women, again, they've been brought up in the same left brain bullshit culture that we have, so they may have been treated differently, but, you know, they've not been raised around men that really gave a shit about their feelings before, you know? So this is the balancing of the two gender energies at the individual and societal level. It's all reciprocal, and it's all spiraling into each other. So, you know, if I am getting my shit in order in my house and I'm going out into society every day, then I'm somehow making society better through my own ripple of impact. And then when I come back the next day, it's gotten even better. So it becomes something that gives reciprocally to me. And that is, it's that spiraling effect of this, I don't want to call it love and light philosophy, but it is sort of a unity philosophy where people are realizing, I guess the duality of the unity. It's the male and the female. And I see a lot better under the surface of the mainstream. I see a lot better balance being restored, I guess, in that. And it's really uplifting.
We're starting to get back to the golden rule.
Yeah, that's it.
Where, you know, do unto others as you would like to have done to you.
Yeah, that's it. That's pretty much it, you know. And it's a lot easier to act that way in a society that acts that way. It's a lot easier to think that way in a group of family and friends that think that way. And it's a lot easier to really live that as your brand when you're a balanced individual. So to return to that, it's you know, these Trevor Hall guys and everybody else, they're creating this renaissance of good balanced music. They're doing it to the benefit of women and men, but it is through recognizing the the beautiful, the beauty and the difference of these male and female energies. And that's something that the mainstream media tries really doesn't want. They want to obfuscate that. They want to make this look confusing, like there's not some basic duality principle that does exist. And we can accept that a basic duality principle does exist without alienating the 0.001% of people who are transgender or whatever else that's irrelevant to the existence of male and female energies in all people.
You know, you would, and this might sound weird to some people, but you would think that, I don't know, you would think that they would seek some kind of transgenderism as something. I would like to say that you would see transgenderism as something, you know, natural and something wholesome and decent, but I feel like because of the programming that mainstream media has done, you know, they've literally demonized these type of people, and things are crazy. And what I'm trying to say, you know, is look at cultures like Rome. You know, why did they worship over the body? Why did they love the body? It's because they understood that the body was the temple, and that we were supposed to strive towards being this kind of demigod, demigoddess, you know, trying to have a life likened to God.
Right.
So we try to, you know, strive for that perfection. But in a world like this, you know, things are kind of crazy. It makes it definitely hard. And I talk about this all the time. You know, some of these cultures aren't compatible with our country and with our current state. And that's why it's important that we shine a light and give proper credit to the people who are doing the work, who are trying to manifest this better tomorrow. But what's going to happen is we're going to take a quick break, a really, really quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk with you about things like magic, willpower, life force, energy, and more. Because why? Because this is Adam of Shamanic Philosophy on Fellowship and Freedom. And if you guys want to hear what he has to say, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back right after this. You know, if you guys, if you're a little geek like me, or you like watching movies sometimes and feeling cheesy, watch The Neverending Story, right? And they talk about, in The Neverending Story, how the nothing is taking over. And really, the nothing is just people not having any more belief, people not having any more dreams, any more fantasies, any more hopes, any more reasons for more. And that's all we're trying to have with you people, show you that there is something more out there, and that you are the more that we are all looking for. Adam, my friend, thank you for joining us.
What a synchronicity, man. We just watched Neverending Story last night. No bullshit.
What's even more, I was going to talk about this before. I watched the Westworld movie, not the TV show, but I watched the Westworld movie just last night.
Wow. Mind blown. Dude, have you had like so many synchronicities going on lately? It's insane.
A little bit.
Can I tell you about one?
Can I tell you?
Can I tell you about one that's like super crazy?
Tell me. Lay it on me.
So this just happened. This is like the craziest shit. Okay, so my girlfriend and I went up to Connecticut. We wanted to go visit a buddy of mine and see the leaves in the fall. My buddy Jeff Sullivan, by the way, he's an artist. He's like my favorite artist alive. And he's on Instagram. You can go find him at Jeff Sullivan Art. And then you can go to jeffsullivanart.com. I got to plug Jeff because he's like my brother from a different lifetime. But we went up to Connecticut to go visit Jeff and his family. We flew into Boston, and then we got this cabin down in Connecticut because everything up there is like super tight, like Rhode Island and Massachusetts and Connecticut, like they're all like right there. And so we got this cabin, this Airbnb cabin, and we got there, and it was just this beautiful little serene cabin on this this little pond. It looked exactly like a Bob Ross painting. It had like a teepee next to the pond, right, and like this beautiful little old country fence by the pond. It had an axe sitting out there with a big yellow handle on it, you know, so I could chop wood. And so anyway, we had this, we just got there to this cabin. We're like, oh my God, this is the most beautiful place we've ever seen. And we ended up having this this wonderful ceremonial healing day where we sat by the pond and made a campfire. It was like 38 degrees. And for like 12 hours, we just pond, campfire, teepee, you know, just it was all there. It was just this beautiful, life-changing day for both of us. And we were sitting there listening to Trevor Hall and these guys out there by the pond and by the campfire and all that. And I was like, man, I feel like these guys, like Trevor and the whole crew, they go to a spot just like this to write this music. I feel like they're right here with us, and that this is the kind of place that these guys go to create this sort of natural, super clarity kind of music. And I feel like I'm right there. So anyway, a week later, we're home. We were there for like 5 days. We come back. A week later, we're at the Trevor Hall concert. We got tickets to go see Trevor Hall. And this guy named Will Evans, who we'd never heard of, was opening for him. And by the way, this is like the best musician I've ever heard in my life. Will Evans, his new album, Rise, is out as of like 2 weeks ago. Unreal. This all happened like a month ago, 3 weeks ago. So this guy, Will Evans, comes out. He opens for Trevor Hall. Best musician I've ever heard. Blows me away. One-man band kind of thing, right? I talked to him after the show, and it turns out that he is from that exact little tiny town where that cabin was. He's from the town that we were eating breakfast in every single day. Now, that was a crazy synchronicity. But then when he followed me on Instagram, and then he liked one of my pictures, and it was a picture of that cabin that we had stayed at and had this amazing healing ceremony and all this stuff. And he said, "Hey, did you rent that cabin on Airbnb? Because I think that's my buddy's cabin, and I think that we were there the day before shooting a music video, the day before you guys arrived."
Nice.
And so his promo video came out, and he sent it to me like 2 days later after their concert, which is like 2 weeks after we were there. And he's paddling around out there on my little pond up in Connecticut on that, you know, and using that yellow handled axe to chop wood. And so you think about what the mathematical chances are of something like that happening, you know, kind of insane.
Astronomical. They got to be in the millions.
Yeah. He'd never been to Dallas before. Of course, I'd never been to Connecticut before. We randomly picked this place off of Airbnb, and we weren't even looking in Connecticut. We were like three-state range. Like, we could have looked anywhere in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, or Connecticut, and ended up at the one that Will Evans was recording his music video in a day after he was recording a music video. Their spirit was in the whole place, and the spirit, it was just, the whole place was alive with that beautiful musical spirit. Anyway, my whole point in all that was that I've been getting a lot of those, like, that's the craziest, but a lot of synchronicities that are along that range of crazy. And everybody in my tribe and my family has been seeing the same thing. And that's just another one of these indicators. If you're out there and you're having these synchronicities flying everywhere, keep your eye out. Pay attention. Because it's usually these synchronicities are an opportunity for us to take advantage of a situation in a really meaningful way, right? This is a chance for us to observe our lives and make a decision that could have a really meaningful result or make a realization of some kind. Keep your eye out.
We were talking about this in between the break, and this kind of ties into synchronicity. But do you think, you know, through things like your willpower or doing this type of work specifically, that I don't know, it opens up the path to
100%.
Higher?
Like, yeah? 100%.
You do, 100%. You know where I was going?
Yep. I'm with you 100%. I'm so on board, man. That's it.
Is it because it's the work that we're doing it that these types of synchronicities are revealing themselves, or that these types of opportunities are coming? Or is it because they were supposed to happen? Like, what and this goes back to the age-old question of fate and destiny. Do we create our own reality? Do you think that you manifested that synchronicity?
I think that we're like a tetherball on a pole. We're like a tetherball on a pole, and that thing has been looping around and around and around, and it's tightening and it's tightening and it's tightening, and it's coming to the very top, and then it pauses, and then it's going to whip backward and spiral outward all over again. We were up in Connecticut, and we're at a park, and we saw a tetherball on a pole. And I haven't seen one in years down here in Texas. I don't see them at parks or anything anymore. So I hadn't seen one in years, and I saw this tetherball pole up in Connecticut right before we had that incredible experience by that pond in that synchronicity I mentioned a minute ago. And that tetherball reference, that sort of analogy came clear to us as we sat on that pond, and we felt, both of us, as if with one mind, felt time spiral up to the top of that tetherball, so to call it, and then stop. And it was like we were present for like the moment the earth stood still. It was like that kind of a thing. And then it paused, and then we just felt time start to spiral back out from it. And so I think that that may have been, you know, a spiraling point coming to an end for my life and for her life at the same time there on that shoreline. You may have yours tonight. You may have yours next week. But I think that what's happening is we are reaching a point when a lot of people are having a lot of these synchronicities because a lot of people's tether balls are getting at the end of their rope. And we're all about to start seeing these types of moments pop up in our lives. Like, and I mean, these types of moments, like one of the most important moments of your life, right? Like it's like an insane moment of clarity, like a Kundalini awakening, like some really insane life-changing rebirth within yourself or a new realization that just breaks you through to a whole new level. I think a lot of these synchronicities that we see popping up are related to that. It's like we're all just coming to such a dense place in the cosmos that we're starting to, it's like running into an asteroid field of synchronicities. Something crazy is going to happen.
You can feel it. You can feel the air is palpable. You can feel it. It's not so much tension, but you can just feel like that.
So during shamanic ceremonies, there have been reports of, and I've seen this, is the air becomes tangible. It becomes tangible with this sort of shamanic fluid. You know, you don't hear much talked about this stuff. You don't hear it written about much or talked about it much, but we've talked about it quite a bit. And it's the air becomes really tangible between multiple people. You can reach up into the air, you can pull it almost like a putty or a paste or something. But we began to realize this is a psychic fluid. And it's like if you think about the observer effect, which I know everybody in the world gets angry when you talk about the observer effect experiment and stuff, because apparently no one uses that as an example properly. So I probably won't do a great job of it either. But you know, if you think about the observer effect, it says that nothing, that no kind of matter or whatever in reality exists the same with or without an observer. So it behaves differently when someone's observing it. And there's something interesting about the air becoming denser at this closure of this cycle, because I almost wonder if the air, just like in a shamanic ceremony, as it becomes thicker, more tangible, I think that happens because the minds of the observers in that vicinity are all hyper alert and hyper aware, and instead of seeing only 5% of the electromagnetic or the infrared spectrum or whatever, you're seeing or the UV spectrum, I'm sorry, you're seeing instead of 5%, you're seeing 6 or 7%, and so you're able to see much more of this sort of fluid airspace around you, because in reality we all just are here floating in a cosmic soup of matter, which is really just energy of a certain vibratory range that's, you know, vibrating in such a way that we can see it or taste it or smell it or interact with it. But in reality we're floating in this fluid of other kinds of matter that's vibrating at you know, frequencies that we can't even comprehend. So I think what's happening is we're really compressing together right now, if that makes sense. Like if you're, you know, dumping goat feed out of a bag, you know, the end of the bag where it's all pouring out, the little hole, it gets really dense and hard packed and kind of a redneck. So I think in terms of goat feed, I guess.
You're all right. I hearing you talk about, you know, this shamanic fluid, this psychic fluid, you know, there are some monks that'll tell you whenever they've reached like a certain state of, I don't want to say enlightenment, but whenever they understand reality to some degree, they say that they can literally walk on air as if it was steps. They could literally see air as if it was just another piece of material that they were able to interact with. And so when you're talking about this shamanic fluid or this psychic fluid that's present in these types of ceremonies, that's what I think of. And then it also leads me to think about what we were talking about at the start of the show, this luminiferous ether, this type of essence, the aether, this energy that's in the air constantly around us, but we don't necessarily have like the we're not able to perceive it. And I'm sure during these types of sound baths or types of frequency-based healing sessions involving light, steam, and all these other things, like the whole sweat lodge concept, I get that. I totally understand that, and it rings so true, because you are able to, or you are able to pull this energy that is from wherever, and then you should be able to share it. Like, I think that's why I kind of get excited, because it's like, how do you describe this type of stuff? How do you describe like this overwhelming abundance of energy that can either charge you, pacify you? Like, there's so much to it. There's so much freedom with this energy that's out there. Like, how do you describe that to people?
Well, Tesla was trying to do it. Walter Russell has done did a wonderful job. I've talked about his book quite a few times, but Walter Russell wrote a book called The Universal One. And it's like the most beautiful and comprehensive and elegant investigation into the nature of light, consciousness, and God that has been or probably ever could be written. And it's, you know, you can't find one, you can't find a copy of The Universal One just about anywhere, you know, for less than 75 or 80 bucks. But it's the most important book I think ever written. But, you know, this is the book is a good place for you to get, you know, to get a good idea about how this sort of fabric of reality might work. And a lot of ancient civilizations, you know, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, a lot of the Egyptian stuff was dedicated to this kind of spell work and understanding, you know. I mean, even Isaac Newton, you know, he wrote a lot on the occult and on alchemy, and you know, alchemy and a lot of occult studies have to do with particularly magic and alchemy have to do with an understanding of this sort of ether, this other field of energy or whatever, which I think is probably the same fluid that a lot of shamans see during ceremony, this shamanic fluid. I think it's a telekinetic fluid. I think that our intent, our will, has gravity. And if you've seen those sort of little four-dimensional or three-dimensional diagrams of, like, how gravity works, but there's, like, one little orb and another one floating around it in like, a three-dimensional grid, and it's twisting the matrix around it or bending the matrix to it because it has gravity, I think that our intent does that, and we are basically just our intent, and we're like a little spark of light flying through this torus field of energies. And whenever you learn to use your intent, you can start harnessing that gravitational power of intent, and or the electromagnetic power of intent, really, which is also electromagnetic. That's also a male-female hermetic duality dichotomy thing there, too. But then, you know, there's... I think what's fascinating... going to be fascinating to see in the near future is going to be where in the fields of like neuroscience and psychology and cymatics and a bunch of other things are they going to start running into magic, you know, into incantations, into spell work and stuff like that, you know, because that's, you know, once you start admitting things like, well, we now know that, you know, your neurochemistry changes whenever someone curses at you, you know, or calls you a bad name or says that you're dumb or whatever, it changes your neurochemistry. Now, what if you said you're dumb in a meaner tone? Well, then we show that it has a greater neurochemical impact on you. Well, now what if we say you're dumb in some ancient language that was, you know, or some modern language for that matter, that was particularly engineered so that the sounds had a very specific impact on your psyche and on your reactions? You know, and we know that words are spells, and the English language is full of spells. So, you know, I think magic is an interesting thing, and I think that it doesn't have to be as Harry Potter as you might think, or as magic in the Tolkienian sense or something. You know, we can look at magic just as a maybe a better understanding of metaphysics. I think Plato said that, like, once we have a proper understanding of physics, we'll no longer have need for metaphysics. And it's all just understanding more dimensions of physics than what we currently understand, which you could dovetail into psychedelics or meditation or, you know, esoteric philosophy or a million other directions. Those people are all doing that kind of work.
I truly believe that. I feel like our next, it's weird how some of this stuff all kind of comes full circle. But I truly feel like that's going to be, or I hope that's where our next development lies as far as humanity goes, is as you said, taking into account things like Dr. Masaru Emoto's experiments, how we're affected by words, how those types of things have an impression on us. But I would like to think in the future we take into consideration a lot more of these metaphysical, these super spiritual, super normal aspects of humanity that for some strange reason have escaped Western science. But Adam, my friend, my man, thank you for coming on. This has been a most certainly powerful episode.
Dude, thank you so much for having me. We're going to have you out to Dallas whenever the studio opens.
Oh, I forgot to say, you're opening up you're launching your studio to take the next step with your podcast.
Yep, that's it. Yep, we've fought for a year to get the to get all the lease negotiated and all that stuff. I guess we fought for 6 or 7 months, and we've been under construction now for a few weeks, and I think we're about 3 weeks out from moving in to the new studio. So we're gonna have a whole new spot to have these conversations and to bring people in and just to inspire the whole team. It's going to be a really cool, inspirational, creative space.
You're going to inspire more people than your team, I'll tell you that.
I hope so. I think so, too. You know, we've got such a great team, though. We've got so much cool stuff that we're doing. But I'm really excited about it because it's going to be, like, you know, the new format for the podcast is going to be cool. It's going to be kind of a conversation between myself and a couple of other guys that are like two of the coolest, most interesting, smarter in different ways kind of guys. And so it's going to be kind of a round table between the three of us. So I've got a buddy of mine who's like really artistic and just an artistic genius. Very critical mind, very detailed thinker, particularly in the right brain sense. And then I've got a guy who's actually the director of operations for my tech company, who I'm going to drag in there every chance I get, who's like the most brilliant left-brained like wizard you've ever seen, right? Like, he's just a genius when it comes to technical operations and stuff like that, and real life problem solving and data aggregation and stuff like that. So it's going to be a conversation on philosophy, on esoteric philosophy, on the occult, on shamanism, on hermeticism, science, occasionally current events and stuff like that, obviously, just to stay relevant and give people stuff to talk about. But all these types of things that we cover on the podcast and on, of course, you know, psychedelics, which I know is interesting for a lot of reasons. But it's going to be a really cool platform. I think it's going to be one of the most thought-provoking discussions that's going to be available on any podcast platform. I genuinely believe that. It's going to be a great one. You guys make sure you stick around.
I don't doubt it, man. Oh, I don't doubt it. I'm pretty sure. With the conversation we've had here, man, I know you're going to blow down some doors, for sure.
Well, I appreciate it, man. And it's such a pleasure coming on here, talking to you, talking to all of your listeners and your audience, too, because there's some of the coolest people out there. I really appreciate the invite.
Like you said, man, it's the teamwork that makes the dream work. And if it weren't for all the good people helping us get to where we have to go, we wouldn't be here. So really, thank you, my friend, for coming on. This is a pleasure. And real quick, last message you'd like to leave the audience with?
Well, I do want to say this, maybe as much to you as to the audience, but, you know, we've talked tonight. I've been ranting for several months now about Trevor Hall and all these conscious artists that are creating this sort of upswelling renaissance. But, you know, what you're doing, man, what I'm doing with the podcast is just there are so many great podcasts and great social media platforms out there, people and organizations that are getting together that are all lifting each other up as sort of an unofficial conscious collective, and everyone's cross-promoting and everyone's trying to spread ideas and positivity and understanding in their own way. And so I just want to say thank you to you for what you do, and thank you to your audience, your listeners, and your crew for all supporting what you're doing, because I think that it's super duper important. And it just as much as we got to have great musicians to listen to, we've got to have great speakers and thought provokers and talk show hosts to listen to as well, because that's, you know, it's we all got to be fed intellectually, spiritually, all that stuff. So thank you very much for that. For the audience, super important message. I would say just please go out with more of an open mind towards your neighbor and a little more love in your heart every day. Take time to meditate, to think about yourself and what would make you happy on a daily basis, and always try to work closer to that, because the more balanced you are, the more that your relationships are going to benefit from that balance, whether it's your kids, your partner, your job, whatever it is. Our time here is short, but the world's beautiful. Make the most of it and be better to each other. Love you guys.
Love you too, Adam. Thank you for coming on, man.
Thanks a lot, man. We'll see you guys.
There he goes. Adam, that's Modern Philosophy. And that is why I wanted to have him on. And I know you guys are probably just getting done with Thanksgiving. I know you're probably spending time with family. You're probably unwinding, just relaxing, and just thinking about this year. That's why I wanted you to have this little gym. Think about what's going on. Think about the amazing individual you can be. Think about the time frame that we're in, the change that's at our fingertips, and what each individual can do. There's a whole lot we went through on this episode, from from the fear box of TV to the divine masculine and sacred feminism, the observer effect, Mandela effect, alternate timelines, all of these things. And all these things are important, because you have to understand yourself, and we have to understand our time frame that we are in. And that's why I cannot stress these types of things enough. This is why you hear me tell you guys it's an honor to be involved in your life in this capacity. It truly is a blessing that we are still here, and I'm so grateful for our amazing team, you know, for Cindy Ashby, our amazing producer, putting all this type of stuff together, to Raw taking us in between the breaks. And again, our crew is so on point. I love our crew. I love our network. I love what we're doing. We're doing it, team. We're making moves, and it's all possible because of you good folk. However, that's all I really have for you guys. If you have any questions, feel free to email me. I'll have it in the description bar below. And as always, guys and gals, I still hope you're guys and gals. Stay vigilant, expose lies, and share truth. This is Noise Era, Freedom Faction, and Adam of Shamanic Philosophy, out.